This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire. Produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Hinkley's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it Bismarck? Was that
Bismarck?
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy? I'm getting confused with
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the shock master's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to a great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Wednesday evening. And we have another exciting mailbag episode for you here tonight. Our last one did pretty well, got a lot of good reception, so we said, hey, let's make this a regular feature. We get a lot of questions from the nation, and our special guest has a lot of mailbag questions as well in his email box. So I'm joined by Scott tonight. But not Scott Criscola. He's running a little late, so I'm going to bring in Scott Keith. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Great to have you here, as always. Very excited to have you back. And you and I are going to kick things off here because Mr. Criscola's en route. He was visiting a friend in the hospital and running a little late, so I told him we will get fired up and he can jump in when he gets here.
Man, visiting somebody in the hospital, some people are so selfish.
I know, right? We're supposed to be reading mail.
Jeez, yeah. Holy cow.
So, before we get to that, though, Scott, let's catch everyone up on what's going on at PoliceTVNation.com. A little piece I wrote today. Did you know that this week was the anniversary of the development of the Stone Cold Stunner, Mr. Keith?
I was not specifically aware of that, no.
Yes, it debuted June 17th, 1996. He beat Savio Vega in his King of the Ring quarterfinal matchup, and that was the debut of the move. So, did a little piece commemorating the creation and the legacy of that move that's up there today. We also have an ongoing series, the movies of the P2B generation. So we started in 1976. We have a group ranking their favorite five movies from each year. We're through 1981 now. And a lot of cool movies, a lot of good memories in there. So if you're a movie fan, a movie buff, and you've kind of grown up in that generation, it's a lot of fun to read them, go through each of those. We had the usual Wednesday walk around the web with links from all around the madness that is the internet from Glenn Butler. We had a new episode of The Bauer Show. Russell Sellers checked out Edge of Tomorrow. He thinks is the best movie you probably haven't seen yet this summer. Scott, have you seen that?
No, I have not seen that. I'm not big on giving more money to Tom Cruise at this point in his career, but I might check it out later.
Yes. Well, Russell says maybe you should check it out at some point because it's pretty good. He also did a new edition of his new hotness, his top comics picks for the week. Scott Criscola had your Raw recap. And, of course, the newest episode of the Place to Be podcast went up on Monday looking at Unforgiven 2002. Kind of an interesting show, Scott. I don't know if you have great memories of that show, but it was one that I thought was on the verge of becoming a classic, but a few things just came up a little short. Of course, we had the great Angle Benoit match, a pretty good main event, a weird Triple H RVD match, but I feel like it was one that if a couple more things clicked, it could have been a classic.
I only vaguely remember the RVD match. Was that the main event on that one, or was there something different on it that I'm not thinking of?
The main event was Brock and Undertaker.
Oh, that one.
The schmoz right. Finish.
The one where Undertaker wasn't feeling it. Okay. Now I remember that one. Yeah.
So, we talked about that in the review about, you know, that rumor that he refused the job the first time around to set up the rematch. Was that from your source at the time? Do you remember that being legit?
Yeah, it was legit. He they pitched the angle, the finish to him where Brock would go over him clean, and yeah, he refused it. And it's Undertaker, so what are you going to do, right?
Interesting. And I thought that was the closest they really portrayed Brock to losing at that point. He actually, Taker got a visual pinfall on him with the ref out, and I don't think anyone had done that to that point. So,
yeah, they were really weakening Brock. I mean, like, it was kind of strange that they put him over Undertaker so strong the next month at Hell in a Cell, and then just jobbed him to the Big Show. And just, I don't know. That was a really weird period for Brock.
Yeah, I know he had the hurt rib. But I didn't see, it couldn't have been that bad that they had a, because he ends up being out of action for a bit though, right? Is he out to the Rumble? I think
he was.
Like,
he was out for a little bit, but I mean, I don't know, the way they freaked out about it didn't really seem to be like commensurate with what the injury actually was, you know? Like it was kind of like, it was like the Daniel Bryan situation here where it's like, we have to get this goddamn title off him right now or else, you know? And it was just like, well, he ended up being out for like 6 weeks and I was like, well, okay, you know, what was the point of that then? Why couldn't they just take him off TV for a little bit, you know?
Especially with having two world titles. Because yeah. Over on Raw, you had Triple H and Shawn Michaels in a pretty, you know, decent feud. And that could carry the shows for a little bit if they had to. I think they were so into the brand split at that point. Because they had finally locked it down in September to where they really separated the shows. And they broke up the titles and everything else. That I felt like they were so committed to making sure they had a headlining champion on top of SmackDown. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I don't know. It was out of some weird thought process going into that whole thing.
All right. Well, why don't we go ahead? We'll jump into the mail a little bit, and then hopefully Scott will be around soon. And I know we get a little bit less time this time around. Some family stuff going on, so we'll dive in and we'll squeeze in what we can. So, Mr. Keith, since we riddled the Facebook page last time for the Place to Be Nation members, why don't we hit up your mailbag first? Get a few of those out of the way.
Yeah, sure. I got some long form ones, some short form ones. Do a lightning round here, I think, first, because the people who email me seem to love lightning rounds.
Let's do it.
So, yeah, let's start with Hall of Fame lightning round. Somebody wondering about who would be inducted next year and thinking about some guys who would be in and what their chances would be. So we'll throw some of these out here.
Okay.
Okay, first up, Goldberg. Where is WrestleMania next year? San Jose? Dallas?
Yes, it's the San Jose, San Fran, Silicon Valley.
Okay. So he's thinking, this guy's thinking Goldberg is going to be the headliner next year. Seems to be likely that Goldberg will be going in sometime soon, I'm thinking, considering the numbers that the DVD did.
Yeah, I think so, too. Between the DVD and he's been kind of talking about it more, and at some point they're going to do it. And I mean, I can't think of too many other headliners they have, unless they finally do Savage, which is also being rumored around.
Also being rumored around, yeah. So that's another one. Next one up, Sid. I think he's got a shot someday, but I mean, I don't know if they're going to be in any huge rush to put him in there or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't see it being a rush. I do think he gets in, but I think almost everyone's going to be in at some point. So I think any former world champion that had a decent run will probably be in. So I would think Sid is earmarked at some point, but he'll be one that they try to fill a class out down the road.
Yeah, exactly. Scott Steiner, I'm going to go no on that one, just because if you thought the Ultimate Warriors interview was insane, then God knows what Scott Steiner would do if given a live microphone at the Hall of Fame ceremony.
The only thing I can think of would be if they do the Steiners as a team. Like, I don't see them just doing Scott Steiner for his solo run, but I think the Steiners as a team probably would deserve an induction. And it wouldn't shock me down the road. I mean, you know, never say never. Is it a high percentage? No, I'd probably put it maybe sub 20%, but I think there's a much better chance of the Steiners going in as a unit than just Scott.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't see it as a signal with him. Sabu, he thinks he should have been in a long time ago. I don't know. I mean, he's as an innovator, okay, but I mean, nothing. He didn't really do anything on a national stage, I don't think, to warrant it.
Yeah, Sabu's another interesting one. I think maybe he'd be like a very low end filler where they need one more guy and they throw him in there and he opens the show. So it wouldn't surprise me, but again, probably very low percentage at this point.
Yeah. Vader. Yeah, I think actually he should be in right now. In fact, I'm kind of confused as to why they never did put him in. In fact.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Vader definitely deserves to be in. I mean, based on his WWF run alone, probably pretty shaky. But when you look at his whole body of work, I would say he definitely belongs in.
Yeah. I mean, if we're counting WCW and WWF as one now, definitely Vader deserves to be in.
Without a doubt.
Yep. Jim Cornette. I think he's burned some bridges there. I don't I don't know if that's going to happen anymore now, but he certainly would warrant inclusion. But yeah, I don't know if they want to put him up there with a live microphone.
Well, we never thought we'd see the Ultimate Warrior with a live microphone being inducted, right? So, I mean, I don't think Cornette did anything as egregious as Warrior has. I mean, he's run his mouth, but who hasn't? Warrior sued Vince, and they had all these other personal issues. So,
yeah.
I'm not going to rule it out. I think he definitely warrants inclusion. Maybe another package deal with him. Midnight Express goes in with Cornette, something like that, like JJ with the Horsemen did.
Yeah, that'd be pretty likely, I think, if they're going to. Big Boss Man. God, he should be in already. That's another one. I don't know if it's because that he's dead that's holding him back, and they don't like to put too many dead people in there like that. But I mean what he was a huge name and a loyal guy, and yeah, he totally should be in there.
I agree. I think he's a lock at some point, and I agree with you. It's surprising he's not in. The only thing I think of is that he's passed away. So that I agree with you there. I think they don't want to have too many in each class, and really they try to keep it to one usually. So I think he's on the list with a guy like Rude that'll go in at some point. Deceased, but on the list.
Yeah, Kevin Nash. Yeah, he'll go in eventually.
Yeah, with his boy running the show now.
With his boy running the show, Scott Hall went in and. Then Kevin Nash should go in too, absolutely.
Do you think they'll do Nash as Diesel and then do the Outsiders as Hall and Nash? Do you think that's why they did Razor Ramon?
I don't know what the deal was. This, like, I don't know why they put Scott Hall in as Razor Ramon in the first place. Unless like you say, yeah, like they're saving up to do the NWO or something.
They have to be. Like that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, like I don't know, but yeah, I think yeah, definitely they put him in as Diesel. Then I mean, you might as well. Like, hey, he's a good candidate as any of the other. Lower card guys that they've thrown in there, so why
definitely.
Not, right?
Yep.
Sean Waltman, same deal as Kevin Nash, the Triple H connection, sure, why not, right?
Yeah, and he's on fairly fine. Good terms with them, right? Isn't he doing some scouting or training here and
yeah,
there?
He's doing, yeah, he's doing scouting and training, exactly, yeah. So I think as long as he keeps his nose clean and everything, yeah, he'll go in someday. Why not?
Nose
right?
clean is the interesting wording.
Hey, this is My criteria for this Hall of Fame thing is pretty low now. It's like, are you more influential than James Dudley and Coco Beware? Then sure, why not, right?
Poor Coco. He worked hard. Leave him alone.
Yeah. I have no personal qualms with Coco. I mean, geez, come on. Like, he had a bird, that's his thing. And it's like, well, that's Hall of Fame worthy now. He had a bird. Okay. JBL, yes, this will definitely happen.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, he'll go into
He's become such a company guy and a company shill that he'll be in, no doubt.
Yeah. and finally, Chris Jericho. The emailer seems to think it'll never happen because of Triple H.
No.
But I don't know. He's a pretty big star. Like,
yes.
Come on.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
Triple H does what's best for business, right? That's his thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to exclude Jericho due to some kind of weird personal feeling, then you're leaving a big draw on the table in my eyes. Like, I mean, that's a guy that could carry a class at some point down the road. Like you said, a mainstream star, too. I there's no way he's not getting in. I mean, he's definitely going in.
Exactly. Okay, so there we go. That's what I got for Hall of Fame lightning round on that one there. Let's see if any other short ones here that I can... Okay, here's something fun to debate over a holiday weekend. I mean, when was holiday weekend? Oh, May. Okay, see, this is where my email box is at now, right? Because I have Gmail, so I don't ever just like I just leave everything archived, right?
Right.
So I have email backed up for months and months and months now. So I'm just randomly going through and finding stuff now. Something fun to debate over holiday weekend. The anniversary of Owen's passing got me to thinking: who is the best wrestler to come out of Stu Hart's dungeon?
Ooh,
I know. Off the top of my head, I can think of Bret Owen, Dynamite, Jericho, and Benoit. Thoughts on that?
Jeez.
Tough question.
You got Pillman, too, but his run was a little bit shorter, so.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have to think that, Bret Hart overall was the biggest success out of the bunch. Probably the best wrestler was Chris Benoit, but, yeah, I don't know. That is a tough question.
I mean, I don't know how you even go about ranking those guys. I mean,
yeah.
Jericho is an interesting one. I think pre this, like his last run in 08, he probably would be at the bottom of that group. But God, he was so good in that comeback that I think that really vaulted his legacy. Do you agree there?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the Shawn Michaels series, like that really. And,
right.
You know, I mean, the CM Punk one, yeah, it was, but yeah, like the.
And even the Edge one, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those runs, like I really think that Shawn Michaels run That one boosted him from kind of like, you know, the joke unified world champion to somebody who came back as a legitimate main eventer again. Now, like he was a guy who was, you know, you could put on top and expect to be something of a draw.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, as far as success, I guess you're going to say Brett and then Jericho probably second, if you're looking at most successful guys to come out of there. Right.
Yeah. I mean, especially on a mainstream level as well. Definitely. Yeah.
But even at this point in wrestling, I think he was probably the most second successful. I mean, Owen could have been, but obviously career cut short, same for Pillman. And obviously, you know, what happened with Benoit. I mean, in the ring, he was successful. But I would say Brett, then Jericho, probably 1-2 as far as overall career success. I mean, just flat out best in the ring, probably Benoit, then Brett would be my 1-2.
Yeah, I can agree with both those for sure.
Good question, though. That's a real real mind bender.
Yep, exactly. Did you have any you want to fire off, or do you want me to keep going through mine here?
You can keep going. We'll save some of these PTB ones for when Scott arrives.
Okay. Okay. Next one is talking about Hollywood heel Rock, who was one of my favorite characters of all time, for sure. Has there ever been a greater specific persona for a guy that was only a short-term thing, like, say, 6 months or less? Even though two of his three pay-per-view matches were big steaming piles of monkey crap, in just 3 months in 2003 that he went full bore with it, he left a trail of memorable moments and promos that most couldn't pull off in a few years. Yep, no kidding. From the Rock concerts to his mini-feud with the Hurricane before Triple H ruined everything there, the greatest Titantron intro ever conceived, he was just on fire. And his final promo at Backlash prior to the Goldberg match was coked out to the point where even guys from the 80s would probably tell him he needed rehab. So he's wondering if anybody had any suggestion to guys who ruled more with a brief gimmick. Oh, boy, I don't know. That was...
So I guess we're not saying short runs, right? We're just saying a specific gimmick. Because like one I kind of thought of was Paul Heyman when he first came back with Brock. And he did all the stuff where he was carrying week to week in the feud of Triple H, and then he kind of disappeared. But he ended up staying on pretty consistently, so I guess that doesn't count.
Yeah. Yeah, God, that Rock, oh, man, that was awesome stuff. Holy cow. Especially, yeah, like the Titantron intro, where it was like the helicopter flying over the city. And then, man, he just, that Toronto show, he just had that crowd in the palm of his hand. And it was just, that was magnificent to
So I'm not sure we're going to come up with a better one. So let me spin this around and ask you this, Scott.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever had two better organic turns that were driven by the fans than The Rock? So hated face, the fans kept booing him, die Rocky die, so they turn him heel. Fantastic heel, so much so that the fans turn him face, and then the fans turn on him so badly that he goes heel again. I mean, I shouldn't even say two, I should say three. Has anyone ever had three organic turns like The Rock did in his career, where the fans completely dictated how it should go?
Austin came close with, but I mean, that's a totally different thing. In that, like, with the 96 run, fans were pretty much driving him up the card.
Right. But
even that was only one, yeah. Same kind of thing with Dusty Rhodes when he was a heel in Florida. Like, that was a very organic fan-dictated one. But I mean, then nobody was going to turn him heel again. Like, he was... I mean, Rock was a very, very polarizing guy. I mean, like, he could, you know, when people loved him super, people hated him super much, and he was awesome either way. So I think that had a lot to do with it. The fact that he could ride it out either way, like it wasn't like John Cena where he was resisting against it. You know, he knew how to actually go with it,
right,
and take, you know, use it to his best advantage to create a new character.
Do you think how about Undertaker? Trying to think of some of his turns. Like, I think his initial face turn was fairly organic.
Yeah, people were cheering for him, like, even in 91.
Yeah.
Like, they could tell that this was, he was a big thing. And yeah, he was, I don't know if there's, like, serious backlash against him like that.
Thing I could think of is late 01 when, but even then, no one really turned on him. It was more like kind of the internet fans and whatnot that were kind of sick of him. But on TV, he was still getting a lot of pop. So, yeah, I don't think anyone's ever come close to Rock in that regard as far as most organic turns like that. And I don't think anyone's ever come close to the short run with a specific gimmick either. I think that was pretty accurate. I can't think of another one better than he had.
Well, Rock is the best. I mean, it's...
Definitely is.
I'm not exactly...
Do you think these last couple runs have hurt his legacy at all?
I don't know. I wouldn't say. I mean, he's already done everything, so there's not really much to hurt as far as that goes. I mean, I don't think he needed it. Is the thing. Like, I'm still confused as to, I mean, was he trying to make John Cena a bigger star, or like, what was his what was the purpose in it? I wonder, because he certainly didn't help CM Punk very much. I have to say, like,
no, not at all.
You know, that was the thing. He could have done a lot more as far as that goes. Like, I really would have rather the once in a lifetime run with Cena. That was fine.
Yeah, that was great.
I think it was the rematch. If anything was going to hurt his legacy, it was the second run, where it was the foregone conclusion title change, and kind of ending CM Punk's title reign on a real, you know, down note. And
I mean, in retrospect, maybe you have Punk go over him at Mania back to get his win, and you finally do Cena Taker, knowing that Taker was done the next year.
Yeah, there's a lot of hindsight involved there. Unfortunately, but I don't know. It's just the match with Cena was pretty terrible at WrestleMania. That paid everything off. I think that's the thing. I mean, if he had went out with a classic match against Cena, then it might have redeemed things somewhat. But it was such a lackluster second run, and just kind of a disappointment compared to what people thought that the build. Like, you know, you're thinking, oh my God, you know, CM Punk and The Rock are opposing each other and doing promos and building to big matches. It's, you know, how can this not be money? And it just wasn't. It was just, the dynamic just wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, the 28 match was really good. So it's too bad that wasn't their only match. I mean, I don't think they had it in them to top that match. So I don't, I agree that it probably wasn't worth going to the well again.
Yeah. Let's see what else I got here. Okay, random questions. In your view, who was the better worker, taking their whole career into account, Sting or The Undertaker?
Jeez.
I mean, better worker, probably Undertaker. Like,
I think so.
He had a bad run, sure, but by the time he got to, you know, 2004, where he was doing a limited schedule and watching UFC on the side and trying to turn into a fighter, I think he became he was able to evolve into a much better worker than somebody like Sting, who's basically been doing the same match since 2001, but slower.
Right. And Taker, Taker had that kind of overlooked stretch too, 96, 97, 98. Were not great matches, but very good matches when he had the right person. And then, from 04 on, really became a very good worker. And really from 06 to 09-ish was phenomenal worker.
Yeah, I mean, the Batista match was, you know, that was kind of throwing down the gauntlet to everybody else, I think.
Right, the whole series. And even the Edge series the next year was very good as well. So, and then, of course, the match to me that always officially put the stamp that he had turned things around for good and was becoming a top-notch guy was the Kurt Angle match at No Way Out 06. Like, he had very good matches before then. Even 03, he had some good ones. But to me, it was that match in 06 is what turned him into, like, a high-level guy.
Yeah, that was crazy stuff, that series. But I mean, you know, it's Kurt Angle in his prime, so you know, how could it not be awesome, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean and that's a funny match too, because it starts a little bit slow, and I remember thinking, all right, this is pretty good, and then once it kicked into that extra gear, it was just fantastic until the finish. I feel like his match with Edge at WrestleMania 24 was very similar to that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was never as into that match as other people seem to be. I mean, I knew it was a good match, but it's not one that I go back and watch a lot with a lot of excitement to it. I think like their Hell in a Cell match at SummerSlam, I think was a better match,
right,
as far as that goes, even though that was a match where it was desperately needing somebody to tap a vein and bleed all over the ring.
Yes.
I was just watching it, and they're like beating each other up, but I'm like, I mean, I know they can't do it anymore, but God, for old time's sake, I just wanted to see somebody, you know, just accidentally bleed all over the ring. And it's like, you know, I know it's barbaric and everything like that, but sometimes you just need it, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, that whole series, I don't know, like the WrestleMania match, I think, like I say, it was good. It was like a 4-star match, I think. But I mean, I don't know. I just never bought Edge as a guy who was going to be a serious contender to end the streak. And it really took something out of it for me, which is probably why I kind of enjoyed their other series of matches better, because, right, because Edge could actually win those matches, and a few of them he did.
Well, I think it's crazy, too, if you think about it. You sat there and said it's a 4-star match, but would you have even banked on those two guys having a 4-star non-gimmick match? Like, I remember that was my worry heading in, was wow, they're not going to put a gimmick on this thing. It's going to be a straight up one-on-one match. Like, I couldn't really envision what kind of match it was going to be. And to even bring out four stars to me was amazing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, it speaks to, you know, Undertaker being a hell of a worker when the chips were down. Right. And, you know, he was a guy who's always been able to perform at WrestleMania. And then the fact that he couldn't perform at this last WrestleMania, it shows you what kind of bad condition he must have really been in, because, you know, that was his one match of the year, and he couldn't even.
You think he's done?
Bring it for that.
I know there's some guys on your blog that I've seen say they think he may come back one more match to a better farewell or a tag match. I think that's it, though. To me, it's not his style to come back for that last match. I think he looked at the lights, streak ended, and he's done.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, Paul Heyman certainly still seems to be milking it, but. You'd have to think if he was going to, there would have been some kind of follow up, like,
right.
And there's just been nothing. I mean, you know, Paul Heyman obviously saying he broke the streak every week to build up Brock Lesnar, yada yada yada. But I mean, like, he lost the match, and there was no promo where he comes back and says, you know, oh hey, by the way, next year I'm going to come back and kick your ass all over, you know, whatever stadium, right?
And would anyone even really be into that? To me, without the streak, like. Is anyone dying for Undertaker to get revenge? You're not going to reinstate the streak by beating him. So to me, you know, it's not going to be a great match. Like, I would have zero interest in them fighting again. Unless it's just on, like, another, like, whatever, at the Rumble or something, I guess. You know, then it's fine. But I would not want to see that again at WrestleMania.
Well, that's the thing. And there was very little interest in the WrestleMania match in the first place.
Right.
And so it's like, so you if you lose the streak aspect of it, then, like, and lots of people I talk to, that there was literally no interest in that match. Like, it was nobody brought, you know, Brock as a guy who had a legitimate shot to break the streak, and it wasn't very well booked or built up or anything like that. So, you know, yeah, exactly. If you take away the streak aspect of it, you know, what are they going to promote it on? You know, well, a broken down Undertaker, we're already lost, is coming for revenge. Well, you know, so what?
Right.
You know, yeah, I think he's already proved everything he needs to prove, you know?
Agreed. I think he's done. I think he should be done. Just even for his own health and well-being. Like, I don't need. I've seen more than enough Undertaker matches in my lifetime, and I don't want to remember him as the guy hobbling around on one leg that could barely stand up, with a shaved faux hawk and just stumbling around the ring. Like, I have great Undertaker memories. I'm good if he's done from here on out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, see, I mean, yeah, you can't fault him for anything he's done now at this point. Okay, Shawn Michaels recently did a Q&A where he denied Undertaker sitting at gorilla position at WrestleMania 14. And said that no one, including Austin, knew if he was going to do business that night. Do you know how legit this is? Seems to contradict prior interviews where he says he told Vince after the Rumble injury that WrestleMania 14 would be his last match. Well, I love Shawn, but he seems to have a fluid notion of the truth.
And, well, and you know, I don't know. Whatever Brett says, you know.
Yeah. Everything that I've heard from people other than Shawn is that Undertaker went to him and knocked on his door with taped fists and told him, get the hell out there.
Yeah. I think that's more likely. You know, I think we talked to Kevin Kelly about this, and I talk to Kevin so much now that I can't keep everything straight that he tells us. And I'm pretty sure Kevin had said that he believed Taker talked to him, but not the whole standing in gorilla, like clenching his fists, like threatening Shawn as he walked to the ring. He seemed to think maybe the Taker approached him ahead of time, basically just said, you know, you got to do what's right kind of thing. I'd have to go back and listen when Kevin was on with us for the first half of 98.
Yeah, but Undertaker kicking down his door and taping his fists is a much better story, though, than
him menacingly standing in gorilla.
Yeah, I'm just going to choose to believe that one because I think it sounds better to me as a fan, so. So we'll go with that because it's more entertaining for me. Finally, do you agree or disagree that Bret, Mysterio, and Angle were all better in-ring performers than Shawn Michaels? I'm the only fan who feels this way. Oh,
he's not. I can tell you Stephen Graham of PlaceOfNation.com definitely feels that way. He's like the most anti-Shawn Michaels person I know. Chad Gamble, too, a little bit anti-Shawn.
Arguing that they were better in-ring performers than Shawn Michaels? I mean, I don't know. I might agree with certain aspects of it, but geez.
Shawn's become an interesting case in a lot of the more thoughtful, and I don't mean that in a way like other people aren't, but the crowd that really tries to attempt to study matches, and I don't want to say they're not enjoying them, But yeah, I watch a match and I look at it superficially and I try and break it down a little bit, but I just enjoy the match for what it is. And there are guys out there that are a master class that I could never approach that will watch a match and look at really the minutiae and the little things. And a lot of them seem to be trending away from Shawn Michaels as being a great worker, whether it be due to some of his selling of certain body parts, the pacing, some of the, you know, the way he'd work moves. So it's an interesting dichotomy that a guy like Shawn over time in certain communities has lost a little bit of that luster, if he had any at all, with certain people.
Well, shit, maybe he should come out of retirement then and do another few 4.5-star matches.
And
right. That's the only, somebody call him, get him on the phone. You know, and,
I mean, nobody's had better. I mean, it's amazing when you think of the two runs he had. Like, he's a Hall of Famer on his own if he retires in 98 and never comes back. And then he came back and did another 8 years of awesome matches.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Okay, well, just going against it. Okay, for Brett, for instance, was Brett a better in-ring performer than Shawn? I guess it depends on criteria, better in-ring performer. But, I mean, I think as an overall performer, Shawn blew away Brett. I mean, Brett was a better technician, certainly, and understood a lot of the different, like, little things better about the psychology, like that. But I mean, just as a pure baby face, for instance, Shawn Michaels just like, would, like, especially in his last run here, where he played babyface for about, you know, 8 years straight. I mean, Shawn Michaels could take a beating like nobody and mm-hmm. build sympathy from the crowd against just about damn near anybody. I mean, he was awesome. And in terms of, like, you know, building up that Ricky Morton babyface heat from the crowd where you feel sorry for him, and then, you know, build up to kicking a guy in the face to beat him again. So I would have to go Shawn over Brett. Mysterio. A lot of Mysterio's legacy, I think, has been tarnished by the last couple of years of being broken down by injuries and
right
and that kind of thing. Certainly when he was in WCW, Mysterio was operating on a really high level, mm-hmm. even higher than Shawn was around the same time, I think. So, I mean, in ring-wise, yeah, I can see the argument for Mysterio, certainly.
Sure, I'd say pre 04 Mysterio. I think 04 on it, when the knee injuries really started to catch up to him. He was still really good in 02. I mean, that match with Kurt Angle at SummerSlam, he's really flying around the ring like he was back in WCW. And then even 03, some of the tag stuff with him and Kidman and him and RVD a little bit, that tag team. I'd say by middle 04 into 05 is when he started to – because that series with Eddie was, to me, the one that's kind of began to let the light in that he wasn't the same performer.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing with Ray is that he understood the psychology of being a babyface so well that he could disguise a lot of it. As well, too, like the same kind of thing, where he understood how to go out there and sell, build up sympathy, and then make the comeback,
right.
Which is, you know, something that's lacking a lot in guys today, I find. But
he had great matches with Eddie, some of those, but they were different.
Mm-hmm. They were very different.
A lot of the psychology, like the one at the Bash. I mean, they were really good matches, but they weren't the sprints and the crazy high level work rate stuff that we have been used to him doing in WCW and even in his early WWE run.
Right, exactly. So I mean, as if you're comparing Ray against Shawn from the same time period, yeah, I think Ray would certainly win. But I mean, yeah, in their later years, where both of them were doing the same similar kind of thing, I think Shawn was still operating at a really high level, even while he was doing a more toned down version of the match where he was selling a lot. So I would give it to Shawn there. Kurt Angle, Kurt was a high level guy. That was one where I could, as strictly as an in ring thing, Kurt Angle at his prime could go up against almost anybody, I think, as far as an in ring performer. So yeah, I would say Kurt is one where I could definitely see the argument of him being a better in ring performer than Shawn was, certainly, because when Kurt was on, he was just he had a run from, you know, 01 to when he went crazy. That was just phenomenal matches night after night with almost there was hardly anything where you'd get, like, you know, an off night from Kurt or a bad match or anything like that. Like, he was out there bringing people up to his level on a nightly basis.
Well, it's funny because I feel like Kurt is very similar to Shawn in some of those same circles, a guy that's really picked apart and broken down. And a lot of his, I think, is due to his kind of manic style with the pop up and high move and frantic pacing, not a lot of selling in between, you know, not a lot of transitions in between moves, just move, kind of a crazy pace. And Scott, we have a special guest on the line because there's a guy that kind of runs in these circles I've been talking about. And I wanted to get his take to have someone explain better than I what the beef is out there with a guy like Shawn Michaels or Kurt Angle. Chad Campbell, are you with us?
I'm here.
All right. Chad is, of course, one of the co-hosts of Where the Big Boys Play. You hear him on the Sports Lounge, and he writes for PlaceToBeNation.com. And, Chad, one of Scott Keith's mailbag questions. And Scott, actually, I'll let you reread it, and I want to get Chad's initial take on this.
Basically, yeah, the question was asking, who would you say, excuse me, if he, whether Bret Hart, Kurt Angle, or Rey Mysterio were better in-ring performers than Shawn Michaels overall, because he felt like he was the only person who felt that way.
Okay. So I would probably put Bret Hart and Rey easily over Sean for me. Reason for that is just longevity overall. So when I think about Sean, to me, actually my favorite Michaels run is kind of shockingly probably the Midnight Rockers, which I know is very odd to sound like, but their series versus Playboy Buddy Rose and Doug Summers from 1986-1987, I thought was incredible stuff. And then I really like Sean up through his first 1998. After that, I don't think I'm as down on him as some people that I know, but I do see a lot of flaws in the way he performed, mostly in his facial expressions, dealing with kind of the way he would, I call it overacting, which was bothersome to me. Rey, just going why I would have him over Sean for the career-wise is I think the AAA stuff that I've watched for him in Lucha has held up very well. I mean, it's been spotty, but it's been very high action and held up well. His WCW run, I thought he's a quintessential babyface, and him versus Eddie in 1997 is a great feud. Him versus Dean Malenko, like in 1996, Great American Bash is a great match that holds up. And then his WWE run, I really feel like gets a little bit shortchanged because even the stuff versus like Chavo Guerrero, he had some really good matches with Chavo Guerrero. A couple on pay-per-view, I remember a SmackDown, like Mexican Death match that was really good. So that I would have Rey ahead of Shawn. Hart, I would also have ahead of Shawn probably overall. I think that's very close, only because with Bret Hart, the window is fairly short when you start looking at a whole career arc. I mean, he did have, what, probably 14, 15 years we have of him, but I don't include hardly any of the WCW run in that because it was so disappointing. Kurt, again, I'd say it's a limited run. I'm not going to pretend I've watched a lot of his TNA stuff. So mainly basing it on WWE stuff, I'd have Shawn ahead of him just because of the Rockers run, tipping him over the top.
All right. Your phone connection sucks, so we're going to drop off. But thank you for that dissenting argument, and that is exactly what I was saying, Mr. Keith.
Yeah, I didn't thought about the Rockers run too much. You know, certainly the Bloodbath match with Buddy Rose and Doug Summers is probably one of my all-time favorite matches. So, I mean, certainly, yeah, there's an argument to be made there that that Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty going out and getting coked up every night and bumping like they couldn't feel any pain was going to lead to good things. And hey, you can't argue with the Brainbusters series either as far as great matches.
No, and the much ballyhooed match that's really picked up steam is that MSG match with the Powers of Pain. I think it was from like early 1990. That's become like an online internet favorite over the last couple of years. I don't know if you've seen that one, but really well done. And I've seen people argue that it's the Rockers' best match.
Okay, then. Well, maybe it'll come up on the network sometime and I can check it out then.
I'll have to see if it's on there yet. But, I mean, obviously you can't forget their match with the Orient Express at the 91 Rumble as well is up there too. So,
yeah, that was pretty good one.
Yeah, it's a good – I've seen the Powers of Pain. I think it's very good, but there are some out there that are gaga over it. So you should check it out if you get a chance. But
people on the internet are weird. I don't know. I'll leave it at that, I guess. But, okay, next up. Both the Battle of the Billionaires. Okay. I like what all the kids are talking about now. Donald Trump. Okay. Just reading. Oh, this is from April. Just read the latest lightning round where you declared Bobby Lashley the biggest main event flop of his era. Just wondering if WrestleMania 23 could be done over to give a babyface who could actually benefit the rub of shaving Vince's head and getting paired with Donald Trump. Who do you go with? God, who was even the choices at that point?
Well, it wasn't supposed to be Lashley. Was he always the choice?
No, that went through a whole bunch of permutations. The original thing was going to be
Hogan, wasn't it?
Hulk Hogan, yeah.
Yeah, Hogan. Was that Hogan and Khali?
Hogan and Big Show was the
original. Oh, Big Show,
one.
That's right.
And then they swapped out Hogan to Khali, and then Hogan got swapped out for somebody else. I think Kane or something like that. And they still did the Kane-Khali match, but it wasn't involved. And then, yeah, it went through a lot of different permutations before they got to Bobby Lashley and Umaga. I don't have the full list handy here, but yeah, because the original idea was supposed to be Hogan body slamming Big Show in a tribute to the WrestleMania 3 spot,
right?
Because it was in Detroit and the huge anniversary of it or whatever, and they ended up doing Kane body slamming Great Khali instead. As the tribute, which is, you know, totally the same thing.
Right. So, I mean, same, you know. Same build, the same story, the same animosity. It was all there.
Yeah, exactly. Who WrestleMania 23, okay. Who would... Bobby Lashley was a large black gentleman and the strongest man that Donald Trump ever seen. So, I mean, there was a certain...
We love you, Bobby Lindsay.
We love you, Bobby Lindsay. Yeah, exactly. God, Donald Trump.
I love Trump because he... Like, you know he cares deep down, but he's just so aloof that it's almost like he can't be bothered to get the details right. But you know it's not because he doesn't give a shit. Like, he clearly cares. He just didn't really have the mental capacity at that point in his life to remember wrestlers' names, I guess. But
yeah.
What do you think of putting, like, a Kennedy in that spot instead of the Money in the Bank?
I hate Ken Kennedy, so...
Yeah, but that was his peak right there.
That was his peak, yeah. I mean, that would have been equally a waste, obviously.
Yeah.
As far as that goes, would you have done him as the heel or the babyface or what? Because
yeah, I think you would have been a better fit than Umaga as the heel, actually, because you could tie in.
Oh yeah, definitely is. Yeah, if take him in Umaga spot, yeah, he would have worked fine in that spot.
Yeah,
for sure, because like he was supposed to be Vince's surrogate son or whatever stupid bullshit that was. But he would have been fine. I'm trying to think, what about like Jeff Hardy or something in that. In the spot as the babyface, maybe.
Yeah, that kind of worked. I feel like he's not that you're going to be serious for that role, but like, could you picture Jeff Hardy at the press conferences with Trump? And, like, Lashley at least kind of had the look and the demeanor. Yeah. Not a great speaker, but the demeanor to be.
Well, was that before or after he won the title from Triple H for the first time? Because I'm old and I can't remember anything.
Hardy, that wasn't here. Until 08.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it was a while before, because the next year heading into 24 was when he was supposed to win Money in the Bank and he got popped for the drugs and
right. They
delayed it till the end of the year.
Okay. So scratch Jeff Hardy then.
All right. So looking at the card, here's what we had. We had the Money in the Bank was Kennedy, Punk, Orton, Finley, Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, King Booker, and Edge. Don't see anyone there that could have really been on Trump's guy. I think Matt's in the same boat as Jeff, even though he was getting really good in 07, 08, 09 was his best stretch.
Yeah.
I don't think Punk was ready, obviously, yet.
Well, Orton, maybe.
Well, he was still in he was in the heel run. Well, they kind of turned, they did the thing with him and Edge the night after Mania, right? Was that the year they fought the night after Mania and had that really good match? I think it was, coming off the rated RKO run.
Possibly. I was watching WWE Classics on Demand at that point, Brett, so...
I think it was. Orton in a face turn could have worked.
Because, I mean, God knows that they wanted to push Orton. So,
right.
I mean, like, if there was somebody that they were going to go balls out with to try to make their big star, then Orton could have been one of the guys.
They wanted to go balls out.
Balls deep, whatever you want to call it. Yeah,
So the rest of the card is not... I liked 07, but not very deep at this point. So they had Khali and Kane, no. Benoit and MVP, no. Taker, Batista, obviously, elsewhere. The interesting match you could look at is the ECW Originals versus the New Breed. I don't know if there was anyone in there. You had Elijah Burke, Marcus Corvan, Stryker, and Thorn. I don't think Burke was ready. The only one I could maybe picture being in there. Maybe Corvan, but he wasn't. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there was anyone else really strong enough on the roster at that point.
Yeah. Well, there we go then. So I guess
the Highlanders?
The Highlanders. Holy shit, yeah.
It's amazing how... I mean... Because you hear so many people say, oh, the promotion has been the same forever. It's the same look, the same part. They need to mix things up. But then you look at a roster from 7 years ago or 4 years ago, and you forget all the guys that have come and gone. It just, like, amazes me half the time when I look at some of these names, and I'm like, geez, I forgot about that guy. Like, the Highlanders, geez, I completely forgot about them.
Yeah, if you think the tag team division's bad now, geez, yeah. Okay, Moving on. What worker had the most five-star matches by association? Someone that wasn't great but got to be part of five-star matches due to circumstances. Like the Road Warriors have a couple with War Games and Canadian Stampede. Same for Gold Dust. Okay, interesting.
So are we looking at circumstance meaning due to being like at a certain match? That's what he seems to be saying. Because I was thinking
somebody who wasn't like somebody who was going to have a match by themselves, but ended up being in you know more than one of them just by.
Well, so
know,
I guess what I'm asking though is it due to like being in with another great worker, or is it due to being in a crazy atmosphere? Like War Games to me isn't really like I was going to say Kevin Nash, right? Because he worked a lot with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and had some very good matches. But that's not really a fair comparison to a War Games where you have eight other guys in there and blood and all the storyline. Like to me, that it's hard to compare the two if you're trying to judge what the circumstance is, I guess is kind of my point.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin Nash was, that's a totally different thing. Like clearly the Nash ones was a case of, you know, the other person doing all the heavy lifting as far as that goes. Right. I mean, nobody's going to accuse Kevin Nash of being a high level worker on his own. I mean, like the Road Warriors, they could definitely work up to the level of other people when they were surrounded to him like that.
What about like Jim Neidhart? In a lot of very good Hart Foundation matches, and then he was in the Canadian Stampede match. Guy that never really was pretty much always due to circumstance.
Neidhart was good as far as the psychology of being a heel goes.
Yeah.
I'm going through and doing all these 94 Raws now.
Yeah.
And having to sit through Jim Neidhart squashes is like painfully apparent who the talent on the team was. Like
that was not peak Neidhart.
forearm, chin lock, camel clutch. Like holy shit, man! Like
I remember even at the time. I mean, I was only 13. I remember at the time thinking, why are they phasing out Owen and making Anvil the main feud? Like it seemed even questionable then.
And the thing that's astonishing, like he used to be okay, but it's like you'd think somebody who has been hanging around Bret Hart for 25 years by osmosis would pick something up, you know? Like just God is just. And like even the team with Owen was good, but again, still it was really disappointing. So like I don't know.
Lots of drugs, liquor, and food will completely erode any osmosis you may learn from.
That was just from Ellie. That was just from his wife. I mean, God, think of all the stuff that Jim did. You know. Ellie Neidhart, so crazy and such an easy target. I tell you.
Very easy.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, moving on.
Well, you know, Brett.
Yeah. Who was the best manager wrestler pair ever? This guy loves Perfect Heenan and Flair from 92. Undertaker, Paul Bearer, maybe. Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman. All good choices.
Good questions tonight.
Yeah, I know. Hey, my fans are the best. Undertaker, Paul Bearer. That was, you can't argue with that one.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I feel like you almost have to take them out of the discussion like to another tier.
Yeah,
because it's not fair. It's like they were. I don't think you'll ever have a more perfect pairing than that. I mean, they were made for each other. But what if you look at guys? Maybe we qualify this way: guys that weren't developed specifically for each other. Like Paul Bearer was created to manage the Undertaker,
right?
So let's look at guys that weren't created to manage a guy. Let's look at guys that just paired up that worked.
Well, Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman, certainly a strong argument.
That's a fantastic
one.
Yeah,
yeah, like especially like the 0-2 run where. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, Heyman brought him in, and then, this more recent one is...
You know what I didn't realize, too, as much in 02 until rewatching them now recently for the podcast, is that how much he helped Brock in his matches. Like, time kind of leads you to think that Brock just beat the shit out of everyone and dominated every match. Going back and rewatching them, he actually sold a lot more than I thought, and Heyman a lot of times bailed him out. Either pulling the ref out or putting his foot on the rope or coming into the ring. Like, he was a lot more active, and Brock sold a lot more than I remembered in that first run.
Yeah, it's like going back and watching like the matches with the Hardy Boys. Like, God, Brock sold way too much than in those matches. Like way more than he should have. He should have steamrolled through them. And yeah, he was giving them too much in there. So yeah, I would agree. Yeah, and Heyman did help him out a lot. And you know, Heyman's a guy too who understands the timing and psychology of wrestling, even if he doesn't, you know, get in there and do it. Like, yeah, he can just be by being out there and you know, kind of cheerleading and acting as a timekeeper and everything like that, he can actually help things out as well. Like, Heyman helped out Punk a lot as well, I think, keeping him as a heel just by his slimy mannerisms on the outside, keeping anybody from cheering Punk too much.
Right.
Clutching the belt and everything like that. Like a lot of really subtle psychological things that make Punk seem like much more of a weasel just by association with him. So that was a really good one too, I think. But yeah, Brock Heyman was really good. God, somebody like
how about Bobby and Andre?
Bobby and Andre, that was another good natural pairing. I mean, Bobby with anybody was really good. Like Bobby with Perfect was, you know.
Yes.
You know, hey, that was, they were made for each other in 1990. That was the glory years for Mr. Perfect, obviously. So yeah, that was another good one.
How about Cornette? What would you consider his best clients?
Midnight Express. I mean, just because Bobby Eaton was a guy who had everything in the ring and couldn't talk, and you know, Jim Cornette could do all the talking and made up for all of those shortcomings. Mm-hmm. And like so therefore he didn't have to have the charisma. Cornette had all the charisma for Bobby Eaton. Now, by the same token, Stan Lane could talk,
right?
And he could carry things like that. So I don't know if Cornette was able to help the Dennis Condrey team more or the Stan Lane team more. But
Lane announces a hell of a boat race, so you know he could talk.
That's right, exactly. You know, like, so it's I mean, certainly as a fan, personally, the Stan Lane Midnight Express is the one that I grew up on. Like when I was coming into watching Crockett as a young fan, like that's who I started watching was them, and I was only vaguely aware of the Dennis Condrey version of the team, and it wasn't until later that I started gaining appreciation of them. So I mean, I'm always going to go with the Stan Lane version as far as that goes. But I think Cornette helped out the Condrey team more than the Stan Lane team. Like, you know, Stan Lane had a lot of it on his own. He didn't need Cornette as much as Dennis Condrey did. So anyway.
Well, let me throw this one out there for you. How about Slick and Akeem?
Slick and Akeem, yeah, they were certainly Slick did a lot for his guys.
Yeah, he did. He definitely did. There's something to be said about the managers that are paired with the lower tier guys. They work a little bit harder. It's easy to get Andre over. A little bit harder to get the Warlord over, you know.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't get the Warlord over as the thing, Akeem did a lot. You know, Slick was able to do a lot with nothing with the Akeem push, that's for sure.
Even the Twin Towers in general. I mean, that was, he had a good run with them in the feud with the Mega Powers and got them over as legitimate threats, despite one guy being a fat cop and the other guy being a fat dancing person who thought he was black. You know, it was an interesting team for him to put together and have a main event level run. So
I love Slick. Or JJ Dillon with Ric Flair, for instance, which was one where you wouldn't think that Ric Flair would need somebody to go out and talk for him. But I think JJ served a specific purpose in that role as like the kind of the voice of reason, right? Where Flair would go out and rant and rave about everything, and then JJ would bring it back to earth. Actually, Paul Ellering and the Road Warriors would be another good one as well for that. Where Hawk would go out on whatever substances and talk about, you know, ripping people's spleens out and whatever crazy thing come to mind, and then Paul Ellering would then have to take all that insanity and somehow tie it into, you know, their next match against the Midnight Express in Greensboro, North Carolina. So I think that was one where definitely Ellering was very well suited to them and very underappreciated as well. Because I mean, you know, there was once the LOD went off on their own, they were just kind of Hawk was one who would lose his train of thought on interviews a lot and was never really that effective as a promo afterwards like that. So that was a really good one as well. I think though Brock and Heyman is where I would put my money on for the best combo.
And we haven't even mentioned Jimmy Hart. I guess him and Honky made the most sense.
Yeah, I don't know. Jimmy, I'm not a big Jimmy Hart fan. I don't think he really added much to most of his teams. I mean, maybe with the Hart Foundation, but I mean, once Brett was able to do promos on his own, they didn't need him at all.
Right.
Anymore. I don't know. He was good as an annoyance, but yeah, he was just, as a guy who was supposed to be a high level manager, I was just never impressed with him. He never did anything for me, much like Mr. Fuji, who was, you know.
Yep, thank you.
Yes, you know, like, who actively brought down the guys that he was paired with, so.
What bothered me more with Fuji, I've said this many times on the show, what bothered me more about Fuji was the way the announcers would play it up, like he was so devious and plotting, and then they cut to him and he's just standing there nodding his head, smiling. It's like, Mr. Fuji, so devious in his gameplay, and he's just sitting there, like, completely spaced out on the outside of the ring, just.
Oh, I mean, yeah, especially once he got into the Yokozuna era, Jim Cornette was doing everything for him. Yeah, cashing checks, exactly, yeah.
And then no mention, please, of Frenchie Martin, Dino Bravo, and
yeah.
And Captain Lou. Oh, I cannot stand Captain Lou either.
Captain, yeah, who knew again? I don't know. Yeah, he didn't, I don't know. He was a loyal guy, and I guess he was good years ago, but yeah, it was just, God, by the time he got into the British Bulldogs era and stuff, man, he was just, there was nothing there to add anymore.
Just glomming on. I just hated how he went from tag team to tag team anytime they won the title. He was all of a sudden popped up as their manager. The U.S. Express, the Bulldogs, yeah. All the way up to the Head Shrinkers in 94. It's like, oh, here he is back again, glomming on to another tag team, padding his stats.
Although the best one for that was Sunny in 96 when she was... When she was not even very subtle about it, when
right.
she went through three different sets of tag team champions, basically explicitly pulling a Missy Hyatt and just, you know, and kind of sleeping her way to the top with the tag team champions, is, you know, not very implicitly, whatever, especially with the Godwins, where she was specifically using them for that purpose. So that was kind of cool, I thought. Where they
right,
was.
And that made sense for her to do that, Gold Digger, yeah. This hot chick. And exactly. But having, you know, fat deli owner Captain Lou Albano with his freaking elastic bands in his face doing it didn't really make as much sense.
Well, I mean, and again, like where I'm watching the 94 Raws over again, where, yeah, he basically comes out and like takes over the Head Shrinkers, and it's like, well, why do I care about the Head Shrinkers suddenly coming out and challenging for the tag team titles, you know? Like, it's,
because they have now skinny Lou Albano.
Now, yeah, exactly. Oh, okay, that's great reasoning there, Lou, so. Okay, next one.
Well, actually, before we get to the next one, Scott, our third man in the booth has finally arrived here, Mr. Scott Criscolo, my PIC.
Oh, hey.
Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Right. That's
coming in hot.
Wow, really?
Oh, okay, now you're better.
Okay.
I think you just got really excited.
I'm wearing earbuds here, man. You're going to kill me. God.
Scott, it's good to hear your voice.
Yes,
thank you. On. JR, pleasure as always. Place to be. We're halfway through episode 3 of the Place We Podcast. What was that previous question? Managers we hated?
Is that it should have been. We spent like 20 minutes on it, so we won't go back. But it was best manager and like best pairing of a manager and a solo guy. Like, what was the best fit? And we pretty much said, you know, Taker, Paul Bearer is obviously the easy one. So we kind of took them out of the discussion.
Perfect Bobby, maybe?
Yeah, that was one of the ones we talked about. We went through a few different ones, but
okay.
Yeah, we'll go to the next question now. Keith is digging deep into the mailbag.
Yeah, back to April 22nd, actually. Somebody watching WrestleWar 92 on the network. When you watch the show, you can't help but notice the second half of the show was much better than the first half. First six matches were pretty mediocre, but then you get three outstanding matches in a row with Pillman, Z-Man, Steiners versus the Fujinami and Azuka, and the awesome main event with the War Games. Question is, can I think of any other shows like this in which the second half of the show was so much better than the first half? Well, that's the way it used to work, actually.
Right.
It's called, where they used to put all the crap on first and then build up to the big stuff. And it's actually only recently that they've kind of reversed the trend and moved a hot match to the opener or to in the TV era. So, yeah, there was quite a lot of shows that were
built like that SummerSlam 92. Kind of nothing in the first hour and a half. Then once you get to the Warrior Savage, of course, you get the Kamala Taker, but you also get Brett Bulldog right after. So you get two fantastic matches out of the last three, and that's one I would probably put up there for second half dwarfing the first half.
Yep. There was WrestleWar 90 with the Flair-Luger match on top, and it also had – there was really, really good Steiners-Andersons match on there, I think, as well. That was up near the top in there. I'd throw that one in there. It was
Pillman Zank Freebirds was before
Pillman,
that.
Pillman Zank Freebirds, yep.
That was 25-minute match for the U.S. tag titles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, so there WCW was, says good to say that.
Yeah, there's one show, JR, you and I always talk about that was in reverse, where we had an awesome first half and a really lame second half, and that's probably SummerSlam 89, where the first like five matches are awesome up to Rude Warrior, and then everything after that was... Because it seemed like they had all the workers in the first hour and a half, and then all the fat slugs in the last like 45 minutes. So there's a reversal, but yeah, I agree that they definitely I don't think you see that as much now as now. I think it's where, you know, they probably the early matches are usually the dogs, and then they progressively get better. But WCW was funny like that, you know. Well, and they also had a
WCW would always build to the crescendo. They very rarely sprinkled the big matches lower. It's if you watch anything from watching some of them on there on the network, anything from 89 to like 92. Always built to that peak. You had, it was almost like a house show. You had really low level, almost jobber to the star matches, and then you'd build a little bit from there, a little bit from there, and then they'd hit the big title matches. And I always, you know, you always hear JR say, "Oh, and the net, we got four straight title matches to end the show." They just always seem to build that way,
right?
Yeah, exactly. That's just the way that they used to do it. And it's only recently in the, you know, in the TV era that they kind of changed up the formula to, you know, work a different way. So yeah.
Can't think of any other shows like that though. ECW didn't really do that because their matches were all kind of all over the place anyway. So they never really did it that way.
Scott, now that you're here, let's hang on one sec. Okay. I wanted to hit a couple of the ones from our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good one here from Chad Gamble, and he actually made an appearance earlier tonight, Scott.
Okay.
You have to listen back to that.
Of course.
What wrestler from pre-1970? Would work best in today's current landscape?
From pre-1970.
You could count Bruno.
Would he work today?
I think Bruno works a lot like... I mean, he's... I guess from a promo perspective, he's much simpler than Cena, but he's a lot like Cena. You know, straight up. Mm-hmm. Makes the fans happy.
I don't think anyone's ever heard that comparison before. Bruno San Martino and John Cena.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't see Bruno wearing, you know, teal, yellow and purple t-shirts and wrestling in sneakers, but just kind of his basic way that he worked, you know, very simple promos, pump the fans up, talk down the heel, and then wrestle a decent match, depending on the opponent.
I think as long as you protected Bruno, it would be fine. If you went out there and let Bruno get treated like most of these other, you know, geeks get treated on TV, then he would quickly become just another. He'd be a guy where they'd be really tempted to turn him into, you know, Santino or something like that.
Right, right.
It's pretty fast, just to show they could, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in ring wise, I think actually the Lou Thesz probably could hang with today's product.
Yeah, true.
Like a young Thesz. I mean, like you'll go back and watch those matches. Like he's in some Kurt Angle territory there as far as what he's doing. Like, yeah, these people always think of him as just being a highly technical guy, but I mean, he was somebody who went out there and like he put some sting on some stuff. Like he would work as kind of an MMA type of focused wrestler now, I think, for what he does.
I can't say I've seen a ton of his matches, but what about a guy like Argentine Roca, Antonino Roca? I'm just trying to think of a guy that's more of a high flyer that could really fit in with the style.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Antonino Roca, he was great. Like going back, I get all these, you know, all the Walmart has, like, you know, like the Legends of Wrestling, old black and white stuff that people compile, right? And like that. Yeah, like his stuff was all over that. Like he was, you know, great as like that, the high flying guy doing, like, you know, flying head scissors and all that stuff. And I think it's, you know, the fact that they didn't do a lot of the way that wrestling's worked today doesn't mean that they couldn't do it. It's just, it was a different style at the time. So I think if you took somebody like a Rocco or a Thesz and put them in there and let them get retrained to the style it is today, I think they could easily adjust to it.
I would think strictly from a heel character persona, I could easily see Buddy Rogers fitting now.
Or I could see George too. I mean, kind of along the same lines.
Yeah, I mean, I could easily see. I mean, it's kind of weird to say plucking two different eras, but I could, if you put Buddy Rogers right now in the Randy Orton heel face of the WWE role, I think it'd be perfect. Perfect. You know, that's just that kind of worker.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly, you know, Vince has always loved Buddy Rogers, so like he would find a way to get him over now.
Other than that, I think it's tough, those early guys, because I don't think they could get accustomed to the fast pace of television. I mean, if we're looking at it, you know, in a bubble or in a vacuum, I suppose, I guess you can adjust it for our own discussion. But, you know, if you're looking at guys who are used to wrestling 50 minutes consistently and now you got to try and tell a story in eight, I don't know. It's pretty tough. I don't know if Luthez could do what he did. I mean, Luthez is a fantastic wrestler, of course, Hall of Famer. But I don't know if you could take a guy who is used to wrestling between 30 and 60 minutes consistently and try and make him wrestle 7 minutes on TV with a lot of run-ins and all that kind of jazz. That's the only thing I think, just the culture of the product is just so different. You didn't see, you know, run-ins and – I mean, you saw – I guess you saw, like, heel interference, but not even that much. That's the only tough part. But I think in terms of just characters, you could plop a few guys in here now, and I think they'd fit perfectly. I'm sure a couple can adjust. Some can't. It just depends. Like you said about Bruno Scott, not a guy you could easily plop in because he may end up the modern-day fan may think he's kind of stupid, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah. All right, Keith, I know you got to go. I got one specifically here just from you, from our page, from Aaron George. Wants to know the cultural differences between Regina and Saskatoon, and how much rider pride does one need to be a true Saskatchewanite? Did I get that right?
Well, Regina smells like what it rhymes with, so that's there's one thing there. And I personally, I'm more of a fan of the BC Lions and not the Riders, so I don't really have any rider pride as a fan. But then I don't really watch football either, so I'm the wrong person to ask that sort of question, unfortunately.
Well, no better way to go out than with that one. So we're going to let Scott Keith go. He's got some family business to attend to, but this will become a regular thing. So we had a lot of questions we did not get to for him on our page. And I'm sure you get the mailbag still chock full. So we will get to a lot of those when you're back with us, maybe in about 3 or 4 weeks, Scott. That sound good?
Mm-hmm. Yep, sounds good. Before I go, I just want to make sure everybody goes to thesportingnews.com and checks out my new column that I'm writing there, which hopefully will be on a regular basis now. Where I'm talking about Roman Reigns and his chances of winning Money in the Bank. And it was a really fun one to write, and it's doing quite well, apparently, so they're quite happy with it. So
great.
Everybody go to sportingnews.com and look me up there. And there's, of course, links on my blog and Facebook to it as well.
And you can visit. I was going to continue to plug you.
Read it, and share it with all your friends on the Twitters and the Facebooks and the social media and all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely read that. Visit the blog as well, rspwfaq.com. And I guess, Scott, we should mention quickly, just pay a quick tribute to Mark Haas, the blog contributor at your site known as Officer Farva. Was very active over the last couple of years and a big, big supporter of our podcast and our site. One of the guys over there that was always plugging our stuff. Loved the Kevin Kelly interviews, were always some of his favorites, and always appreciated the way he would push our stuff out there for us. So he passed away a few weeks ago. We just found out, and I just want to send our condolences out there and our memories of Mark.
Yep, very sad. He emailed me frequently. He always had great questions for the mailbag that I used to post on a regular basis, and he was a fun guy, and we're all going to miss him on the blog for sure.
Okay, so with that, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to let Mr. Keith go. Scott, we'll be back. We'll do a few more questions, and we'll wrap things up.
Because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
What's that? Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, George Urbelino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
All right, Scott, we're back now that you're here. How's everything going?
Very well. My apologies for my delay. I was visiting a buddy of mine in the hospital who was who had knee replacement surgery. He actually
his knee.
It's his it's right knee. He had his knee replaced 4 years ago, and he recently had an infection from the one of the pieces, so they had to undo it. So he's pretty much lying in a hospital bed, kneeless. So I went up, and tonight was the only time this week I had a chance to come up and see him. So there we go. So he's doing well. I thank Scott Keith, and I thank Chad for popping in early.
Yep.
Much appreciated, Chadley. I am well, JR. Wow, the humidity has kicked. We are officially in
yes.
after you and Mr. Machado and the crew sweated off 5 million pounds last night.
Yeah, that was quite the workout.
What was that, like the Unforgiven 98 war of attrition?
Well, that was our rubber game of that matchup, actually. We had split the first two, so it was very fitting that it went to overtime and ended that way. So.
Wow. So,
all right, but, so we went through mainly, Scott, you missed. We went through all of Keith's mailbag from his email.
Okay.
Through the first half. So what I thought we would do, we had some questions from the nation that are PTB specific. So I thought maybe we'd go through a couple of those and then we'll call it quits for the night.
Sure.
I want to save. There are some really good wrestling ones we got from the Place to Be group as well. We'll save those for the next time Keith is on. We're just going to keep piling on to this thread.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And as they come in, we'll save them and we'll keep going through them every time Scott's with us. So let's do this one from Jason Greenhouse. Recast Seinfeld using PTBN members. So we have Jerry, George, Elaine, Kramer, Newman, Putty, and I'm already pegging you as Frank Costanza. I mean, that's a layup right there.
I figure I was good. You know, it's funny you said I was going to be a Costanza. I wasn't sure which one, and I figured his dad would be it. That's his dad, right, Frank? Yeah, that'd be pretty good choice.
I'd say Chad is, and Andy Flanagan is definitely Putty. That's a layup too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having trouble with Jerry if it's me or Brad. I feel like maybe we'd both be Jerry.
Mm. Who's Elaine?
Sam Norris.
Yes.
Actually, Jordan Duncan's kind of got some Elaine qualities to him.
I think D'Amato is Kramer.
Oh, D'Amato's Kramer's a good one, yeah. Who's our arch enemy? Who's Newman?
Who's Newman? Well, there's a few of them I can think of.
Kevin Kelly.
Kevin Kelly. Who's what's his, your buddy there, the one that's on your status, that guy? Elaine's, what is it, ex-boss or ex-boyfriend?
Oh, Peterman?
Peterman.
Maybe Brad's Peterman.
Yeah, Brad's suave enough to be Peterman, yeah.
He runs the whole show. All right, let's move on to the next one.
Okay.
Let's see here.
I just have a vision now of D'Amato opening a door and sliding into the room. Why?
Steve Willie with one that's really pushing the envelope.
Okay.
What do you love or respect most about your PIC, but what would you like to see them improve upon? I'll let you start.
What is Willie's motive here?
I don't know. He's trying to get your seat, I think.
Yeah, or he's trying to get your seat. Oh, see, okay, there's a thing. You're assuming that it's my seat that's going to be the vacant one.
All right, I'll say that. Love and respect, I will say you're carrying us through the early episodes. Because you're polished in the radio business. Also, I will say your ability to not give a shit about how effed up some of your opinions may be and how different they are from the rest of the wrestling fan community, but that you go to war with them and that you stick up for them no matter what. I'll say that.
Okay.
Like, I remember specifically when you did the Triple H podcast and, like, it was said a couple times, like, oh, you know, basically saying you got your ass kicked in that fight. And my defense was, you know, it's not easy to go into a fight like that with three really great, knowledgeable wrestling fans all against you, knowing that walking in and still putting up a fight, which I thought you did. I thought you did a very good job on that show.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So I think that's impressive that you can walk into a territory like that and you stick to your guns and, you know, you'll back down sometimes, but usually you'll at least explain why you see things the way you do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Now, for the negative, I think you're an asshole.
Yeah, but isn't that the point of being on the show? Yeah. It's a prerequisite of being on any podcast.
Yeah.
Well, I've always respected your ability to organize. You're one of the best. You and Dr. G, of all the people I know in my life, not just on Place to Be, but outside, you and him are the two best multitaskers I've ever met. You can do a lot of things at once that, as we've seen on this show, I can't. When I hear a funny noise, I lose my concentration in 5 seconds. And I'm upset about that because I, you know, in radio, things are going on around you all the time. You're much better than me at keeping your focus when you're doing something else. Whether it's talking or, you know, maybe your daughter makes a noise, you know, not a noise, but if your daughter's in the room or, you know, something like that, you're good at kind of sticking with the flow. And me, if I look at the screen wrong, then I'm done, as we've seen happen. I applaud you for that. And you did a great job of adapting to the way we edit. Like, our first, like, 10 shows, were very rough. No of you and I in terms of content, but obviously quality, you know, in terms of technically, we've had some shows where we've on landlines and all this jazz, and you've just made the show sound amazingly smooth. Working with GarageBand and cleaning it up, and you do that with all our shows. You make all our shows sound great, and I applaud you for that, because I don't have the patience for that stuff. You do. So I applaud that. And you have a great sense of humor. You may beat a joke into the ground a little bit, but you do have a good sense of humor, and I think that's what makes our shows very good. And I think that's what makes you and Kevin good, too, because Kevin sometimes is a little more, how do I word it?
Pale.
He's not as open to the rib as I am. And you,
you don't think so? I think he's good. I think he is now.
I think he's gotten better. The first few episodes, I think he was trying to keep the Kevin Kelly facade.
Yeah, that went down
quickly. You were doing a great job of being
Carino. That went in the shitter very fast.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, you were being a good Carino, like the two of them are on Ring of Honor, but I think you've done a good job of that. You guys have great banter. I mean, it's not you and I, but I think it's pretty fantastic. So, but yeah, I think in terms of. My number one thing that I love and respect about you is your ability to be to have made all of these shows, because for those that don't know, he is the technical end of the spectrum for us here at Place to Be. And but you've done a fantastic, our show sound awesome.
I'll say this, and for things I think you can improve on is getting to your getting to the point.
I do. You know what? I used to have that problem. Dr. G used to break my stones about it when we were in college, that I was a terrible interviewer because my questions would be so long-winded. I feel like I've done a better job of that, but
no, you have lately.
But so that's it.
Okay.
There's your answer.
Next, let's see here. All right, Jason Greenhouse again. Mm-hmm. Place to Be Nation has a great running series called Movies of P2B Generation. What are your favorite years in film?
Well, based on... Well, I'll let you go first. What's yours?
And it's funny because Grantland has been doing this kind of too, because it's 20 years since 1994, and we have a bunch of 94 stuff planned as well. Mm-hmm. A big year, just in pop culture, sports, and movies. So a lot of great movies in 1994. Dumb and Dumber, Speed. I think Forrest Gump was in 1994.
Yes,
too.
Forrest Gump was in 94.
There's
a
lot of great movies from 1994.
Pulp Fiction. I think you just said
that. Yep. Lion King, Shawshank Redemption, Ace Ventura, Mighty Ducks 2, Dumb and Dumber. It's crazy that Dumb and Dumber, Ace Ventura, and The Mask all came out in the same year for Jim Carrey.
Yeah, he was a machine. Yeah, he was a machine that year.
Your favorite, Interview with a Vampire.
I liked that movie. It was very good. Interview with a Vampire. What, because it was 2 hours long?
The Air Up There, one of your favorites as well.
Oh, God, The Air Up There.
The Crow, My Girl Too. But no, a very top-heavy year, very good year.
Did you see My Girl Too?
Yes.
Anna Chlumsky.
Hey, she's great on Veep.
She was on episode SVU. She was very good too. Law and Order SVU. For me, oh God. I love 77 because of, I mean, that was the Son of Sam, the blackout in New York, the Yankees winning, Jaws came out the following year, but Star Wars, I think Close Encounters was that year too. 87 was a good year. 87 was one of my favorite years for music. But we're talking about movies. 81, Raiders of the Lost Ark. But those pieces have kind of brought me back to some of the better years of movies. 94 was a good year as well. 93, Philadelphia.
98 as well. You got Something About Mary, Armageddon, Big Lebowski, Saving mm-hmm. Private Ryan, American Dude History Bides. X.
Yes.
So 98, a very good year as well. Mm. And then every year he's got big ones. It's just most good. I'd say 94, just to me, on the back of Forrest Gump, Ace Ventura, and Dumb and Dumber, for me personally.
Yeah,
three of my favorites, all in that.
Well, yeah,
year.
That yeah. For me, Forrest Gump, and I love Pulp Fiction. That's probably one of my favorite movies. I love Pulp Fiction. Then they tried to do, what's that movie? 2 Days in the Valley, which came out a couple years later, which was kind of a James Spader, and I forgot who else was in it. And that was like a cheap Pulp Fiction knockoff. They tried to redo it, and then there were rumors they were going to do a sequel, and that was bad. So, but yeah, 94. I like 94 a lot, sports wise.
99 is a good year for kind of cult classics. You had American Pie, American Beauty, Fight Club, She's All That. Like kind of movies that
She's
are
all that.
Well,
God,
that's kind of become a cult classic, you know. Yeah. But that also has Sixth Sense, Star Wars Episode One, The Matrix, The Mummy, 10 Things I Hate About You, Blair Witch. So a lot of big ones in 99.
Mm.
Some interesting. I'd probably go 94 is my favorite though.
Yeah, I have to say 94, 77, 80, 81, 82 for me.
95, A Toy Story. That was not a very good year.
96 had Jerry Maguire.
95 is a rough year. Well, Clueless was 95. Billy Madison. Okay, not too bad. All right. Let's go. Let's do a couple more here. Mm-hmm. Let's see. All right.
Austin Pfaff. I was going to add another year while you were looking. So,
Austin Pfaff. If WWE Network started a Coliseum video section, which video or videos would you want added first?
I would want all the best of the WWFs. One through whenever.
Now, those aired on Classics On Demand. I got all those from when they
were
on there.
That's right. We talked about them often.
Smack 'em, whack 'em. How about that? I don't know which one I'd like. It's tough to say because I feel like
Well, Smack 'em, whack 'em, you immediately get the rarely seen Flair Brett title change.
And Brett Shawn ladder matches on there.
Yes, the Brett Shawn ladder match. How about Super Tape? What's our Super Tape that's got the. I mentioned it on Main Event last week.
Yeah, it was a Super Tape. It was WrestleFest 94.
WrestleFest 94.
Yeah, it's got Razor Shawn and Steiner's Hearts.
Steiner's Hearts. Where did he get fat? I would have to say, for me, the best of the WWFs, all those. Because those are so campy and you know, kitschy. And I love the old school Coliseum video, Titan Sports production, you know, Nelson Swiggler and all those guys. I always thought that was really cool.
All right. Let's one more from Pfaff here.
Okay.
Favorite track off Forcible Entry? And that is not your home movie or Triple H.
That's an interesting. I wonder why he picked that. Well, it is coincidental that he picked Forcible Entry because that came out in the midst of our vaults, JR.
Yes.
Because when I was watching Unforgiven 02 the other day, when Benoit's theme played.
All right, here we go. We have The Game by Drowning Pool. Legs by Kid Rock.
I like Legs.
Young Grow Old by Creed, the Backlash 02 theme. Glass Shatters by Disturbed for Steve Austin. The Roland Dead Man Mix from Limp Bizkit. The infamous one, probably the most famous one, honestly, is Whatever by Our Lady Peace or Chris Benoit.
Yep.
One of the few guys that really used his consistently. Mm-hmm. Never Gonna Stop, Edge, Rob Zombie. One of a Kind for Rob Van Dam by Breaking Points. The Beautiful People by Marilyn Manson. Across the Nation, Union Underground. I always forget that's on that CD. That would be the Raw theme for a while in 02
yep.
through, what, like 05-ish?
05, yeah.
Break the Walls Down by Seven Dust for Chris Jericho. Turn the Tables by Saliva for the Dullies. They use that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Live for the Moment for Matt Hardy by Monster Magnet. End of Everything for Raven by Stereo Mud. Ride of Your Life by Neurotica. That was the WWE band, if you remember. That was the first on their label.
Yeah,
SmackDown label. That was a King of the Ring 02 theme. Just Out of the Victim by Cypress Hill for Taz. No Chance by Dope for Vince. And Love, Fury, Passion, Energy by Boy Hits Car for Lita. So, actually, a lot of people use their songs. It's a pretty good album. I'd say the Matt Hardy song. That was always one of my favorites.
Is that that's the... Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that doesn't even start the song either. That's like in the middle or like
right.
within a minute or something.
And that, a good tie in there, as you know, Matt Hardy, the guest on the Steve Corino show this week. So tune in
yes.
to that.
Yep. It's funny that Glass Shatters is on here, A, because by the time this came out, he was gone, and he wasn't even using it anymore. That was his theme in mid-01.
Right.
Actually, probably...
Well, this came out early 02, March 26th, so...
Okay.
Reached number right. 3 on the Billboard 200.
That's pretty cool. I like Legs. I like Kid Rock's remake of Legs, which is, of course, a ZZ Top cut.
I gotta say Hardy, RVD, and the Dudleys are probably my three favorite. I mean, Benoit was. It's hard to separate that song now, but I mean, I remember just we heard it over and over at 20. Remember they played it like 10 times.
Oh my
times
god! And on the train, all we did was hum it on the way home.
Yeah. So I mean, that was a good one too. All right, Pfaff also wants to know our opinions on Celebrity Deathmatch.
You mean like the one during when Stone Cold was on? Oh,
I think I think just in general.
Oh, any of it? Oh, I like it. I thought it was fun.
I like it as just a snapshot of that time.
Yep.
A very cool time. 97, 98, 99 in TV. Just all this weird shit getting thrown out there. The network's all expanding and stuff like that popping up. And it was a cool time. It was an attitude, the edge, the counterculture. It was a great time to be, well, for some of us, a great time to be in our late teens, angst-ridden, high school, college. It was a lot of great TV at that point for us, South Park and Springer and the Attitude Era.
Well, I was 20.
Yeah.
5, 26.
You weren't the big business by then.
You got corporate. I agree.
It was cool, too, to see the parody of the stars. You know, that made it work as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, one more from Faf. Favorite Friends character?
Is he kidding?
Well, I know Keith is a big Friends guy, so maybe this was intended for him. I was never a huge Friends fan.
Me neither.
I mean, I guess Chandler's the easy answer. I don't know. I watched the first season as it aired, and then I never really followed along after that.
I never watched it. I watched a couple. Or I should say I watched a couple randomly, kind of like when I visit you and I watch a random Curb. It's kind of that kind of thing. What was Rachel?
Yeah, I wonder why you liked her.
Oh. Why would a guy pick a guy? I mean, seriously,
it's
now you've
got a great character. A great character. I'm not saying it wasn't who's the hottest Friends character.
Oh, well.
Well, in your mind, though, no one's a great actor or actress unless they're
No, if you're ugly, then you're not worth it. No. I like Chandler. Although I liked Ross.
All right. Let's go to our last one here. We have a few from Ryan Schmock, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay.
A few questions here. Will we see a podcast for the P2B Generation movie, like A List of Mania? We have experts from the articles, like Nick Duke and Russell Sellers and Katie Price. I think it's a great idea, Ryan. I do think maybe mm-hmm. we could do a network show where they come on and debate each year or each decade.
About that when we were reading it. I like that idea, too.
Okay. Any chance we'll bring back the summer throwback vaults? Well, we're halfway through summer now, and our schedule is already out into August, and there are none. So I will say probably not.
I mean, right now we have the awesome. I mean, right now the closest thing is we have our once-a-month Raw throwback.
Right. Yeah, our schedule's pretty locked in. I mean, we have our, you know, because twice a month we're out. So then we have four vaults, theoretically, and we try and do a Raw rewind and then something else like this or a pay-per-view card. So I don't see much room for it right now. Like, we try and throw a couple of random stuff in, like we did the draft Raw. We did the Night of Survivor Series 01. So when it fits or makes sense, we'll throw one in.
Yeah.
Will you be doing any more live movie reviews?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Again, those, well, I guess it depends on how we schedule it. Usually we do one when I'm visiting you. But we've done them differently. You know, we've done them, like normal. I'm home, you're home.
Right. Yeah, I would.
We're due for a couple. We still got to do No Holds Barred.
No Holds Barred. There are a few that we can do.
There's definitely a few we still got to do.
I do want to do another movie. I think those are fun.
Yeah, they're very fun. I agree.
He also asked, are we going to get to 09 for written pay-per-view reviews? Those are a little delayed. We are working on another project that's going to take some time. We're not going to talk about right now.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a reason that the written reviews have kind of been put on hold, and it's something we'll be getting to months away. But yeah. It's a cool project. It's a really good one, and we think you'll like it.
Yes.
Speaking of projects, Scott, I guess we should announce now that we're in the works here. We're going to be doing a SummerSlam Rewind series like we did for WrestleMania. We're starting to put the works in now, so we'll have them lined up for August for you. Right now, we're picking 5 SummerSlams, and we're going to have 3 host panel for each one. So 15 different hosts. No one's going to repeat, and we're picking a wide variety. We're picking a couple old ones, a couple attitude-ish ones, and then one from the modern era as well. So it should be a lot of fun, so be on the lookout for those on the Place to Be Network. A really cool variety of hosts. Some really cool surprises in there, too, for different hosts. So it should be pretty neat. We got a couple of cool names in the mix, so it should be a lot of fun. And I think we picked some good shows to talk about. So,
yeah, I agree.
All right, one more from Ryan. Yes or no, Scott? Will there be a trivia tournament this year? You know what? You know what? We are out of time, Scott. We got to go. We'll be back Monday. We have No Mercy 02 next Wednesday. Episode, what are we on, 12 already?
12.
The Kevin Kelly Show and the main event. You know you get the Core 4 on, correct?
Core 4 on next week. We will preview Money in the Bank.
Okay, awesome. And Kevin Kelly still working on the guests. There's one we're working on. We're trying to get. We think it would be a really cool one. So we're going to wait, delay that announcement for now until we have it locked up. And if not, we're going to try and get this person to, at some point. But so until Monday, everyone, have a great weekend. Hope you enjoyed this deep dive into the mailbag. We want to thank Scott Keith for coming on. We'll have him back again soon. Until then, please visit PlaceMeNation.com. Visit it multiple times a day. A lot of cool stuff planned. Some more great stuff in the works for you. And until then, until Monday night, at No Mercy. Take care.
Chad didn't go on one of his Prince Devitt rants, did he?
We're going to be reviewing No Mercy from Little Rock. No, he went on about how Shawn Michaels sucks.
Vampire porn.
$5 bill on the real before it's history. Cause fools be having them vacuum lungs. And if you let them hit it for free, you hella dumb. Da-dum-dum. I come to school with a tailor on my earlobe. Avoiding all the flick teasers, skeezers, and weirdos. Got me throwing off the land like where the bomb at. Give me $2, you take a puff and pass my bomb back. Suck up the dank like a Slurpee. The serious bomb will make a nigga go delirious like Eddie Murphy. I got more growing pains than Maggie. Cause homie snagged me to take the dank out of the bag. I'm so keyed up till the joint be burning my hand. Next time I roll it in a hamper to burn slow, so the ashes won't be burning in my hand, bruh. Hoogees can hit, but they know they gotta pitch and bend. I roll a joint that's longer than your extension. Cause I'll be damned if you get high off me for free. Hell no, you better bring your own slip, cheap. What's up, don't babysit that. Better pass the joint. Stop hitting cause you know you got asthma. Crack the 40 open, homie, and guzzle it. Cause I know the weed in my system is getting lonely. I gotta take a whiz test to my PO. I know I feel cause I done smoked major weed, bro. And every time we with Chris, that fool rolling up a fatty. But the Tangeray straight had me. Stop at the light, made my yesterday thing. Got me hung off the night train. You fade, I fake, so let's head to the east. Hit the stroll to 9-0 so we can roll big hashish. I wish I could fade the 8, but I'm no budget. Still rolling the 2 though, cut the same old bucket. Foggy window, soggy endo. I'm in the land, get you smoke with my kid up in smoke. Yuck, I spray your layer down. Up in the OAK, the town. Homies don't play around, we down to blaze a pound. Then ease up, speed up through the ESO. Drink the VSO, pee up with the lemon squeeze up. And everybody's roller, I'm the roller. That's quick to fold a blunt out of a bunch of sticky doja. Hold up, suck up my weed, it's all you do, kicking. Cause we're IBs, we need to have like the foo-foo.